everyone. I'm Haley Allam, and this is Mom Life in Luxembourg. If you're a parent new to Luxembourg, then this is the podcast for you. From crèches to crèmes, we'll cover everything you need to know about raising kids and living your best life in the Grand Duchy. Moin, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today, I'm joined by the absolutely incredible human, Debbie Reber. She literally wrote the book on parenting your differently wired kid in a positive, neuroaffirming way. She's an absolute gem of a person and an incredible resource for neurodiversity affirming lifestyle, really. She looks at it as a social global movement, and I totally agree with her after this episode. So give it a listen and let me know what you think. As always, I would love to hear from you. You can reach me at momlife@rtltoday.lu, or you can find me on social media at Mom Life in Luxembourg. Merci Fumus, and enjoy the show. Hi, Debbie. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Haley. Nice to see you.
Thank you so much for joining us. I feel really honored. I've been a fan of yours for a really long time. I've read your book. And since April is Neurodiversity Awareness Month, I'm doing my bit to bring neurodiversity awareness and inclusion to Luxembourg.
Well, I'm so happy to be a part of this conversation. Great.
So for people who don't know about you, if you could give us a brief intro, and then how I usually like to start the show is I always ask my guests, tell me your Luxembourg story. But since you are in Amsterdam, tell me your expat story, because I believe this is your second time moving to Amsterdam.
It is indeed. Yes. And it's all connected to my story as a parent and what we're here to talk about today. I am the parent of a now 20-year-old.
Oh my gosh, she's 20.
I know. 20-year-old neurodivergent kiddo. And well, I don't know about happily. We were living in Seattle. Many years ago, that's where we started our family. I wasn't from Seattle, but we were there. And I used to work in kids' television, and I used to write books for teen girls, and I had kind of this whole other life. And then I found that I was parenting, A, not a teen girl, but B, a very complex kiddo. And as Asher got older and we started the schooling system, we just really were striking out and having a hard time finding the right fit. We were getting disinvited to certain schools, communities, and we were really just struggling. And we started to really unpack, oh, this is a kid with a really unique brain wiring. And we had no idea what we were doing. And it was really difficult.
Can I ask you some questions about that?
Yeah,
that was
sure.
Probably what, preschool, kindergarten, that the neurodiversity started to pop up?
Yeah, it was preschool. It was the very first preschool, I think, was right before Ash turned 3. And we were there for 3 weeks and that ended. And then we're like, oh, okay. So this isn't what I thought was going to happen. So we were already scrambling to find someone who could take my very intense, at the time, explosive kiddo and manage that. And it just progressed. And within the elementary school system, which in the U.S. is usually around ages 5, 6, and 7, those first 3 years, we went through preschool. And I do write about that in the book, but we were really just striking out, and we started to discover, you know, we got some provisional diagnoses of autism and ADHD, and we giftedness was at play, and it was just really tricky, and we seemed to be moving in the wrong direction. Our family was not thriving. Asher was becoming more, I would say, dysregulated, and we were just, I felt like our family was in utter chaos, actually. And so, expat story number one, my husband got an opportunity through his job to move to Amsterdam, a place that I had never been before. But we're like, okay, like there's nothing working here. Let's try something new. So we literally sold our house and moved here. Darren came ahead of me and got the lay of the land. But Asher and I showed up one morning with all our belongings and we had never been here before.
Wow.
So it was a little intense. And at the same time, we decided I would be homeschooling.
Okay. So how old was Asher at this time?
Asher had just turned 9.
So he had been in elementary school up until this point. You were just, I am not going to even try the schools in Amsterdam.
Yeah, I did start researching schools before we moved. And a friend of mine who was actually the assistant head of school at one of the schools that Asher had gone to and knew Asher since birth, she was always encouraging me, Debbie, this is a kid who really needs a more individualized education approach. when we found out we were moving, I was like, I took her to lunch and I'm like, Allison, I've been researching this school and this international school. And she's like, Debbie, I just got to say, I don't think you're going to find the right fit in Amsterdam if you couldn't find it in Seattle. But I did push ahead. I was really striking out. I found that I had to be honest that I had a child who was neurodivergent, who had these, you know, higher needs in classrooms. And at the time, the international schools were not interested. They just said, we can't support that. So we moved knowing that we were going to have to figure out how to homeschool, which isn't so easy to do in the Netherlands. They're not big fans of homeschooling. And I also wasn't really part of my life plan was to homeschool my child. But yeah, there we were. Yeah.
I just think that's really incredible that you stepped up to the challenge of moving abroad, which flips your whole life upside down, and homeschooling at the same time. My hat goes off to you.
Yeah.
And also, I just have to ask you, like, mom to mom, your kid is gifted. Did you, I don't know if you're gifted. I'm not gifted. My kid is gifted. The idea that I would take responsibility for educating someone who's out of the gates way smarter than me really scares me.
Yeah. Out of the gate. Yes. I relate to that. I think at the time, I knew that a lot of my job was just to help my child feel good about who he was again, because I could tell that he was really starting to just feel like a screw up and was getting in trouble all the time. So I saw that as a big piece of it. And then also, Asher is someone who is interested in everything. And so for me, I knew it was more about curating an experience for him, right? And finding the right resources for him to really dive in. I did feel, though, as you said, a huge responsibility because I felt like, oh my God, this is all on me, right? Whether or not this kid thrives, reaches his potential, which I knew was tremendous, it did feel like a lot of pressure. And when I started out homeschooling, I was super organized. I was working with the same friend from Seattle who I asked to be my curriculum advisor. And I had very structured, I'm like, we got to do math and science and history and all the things. And I did try to really stay organized in that way. But my child pushed back a lot on that because that's not the way Asher learns. Asher likes to dive into subjects for hours, days, and weeks at a time. And so that first year was really messy. There were a lot of like power struggles and like jockeying for position and kind of figuring out how this collaboration would work. But every year it got a little easier and easier.
What wisdom do you have for parents who are jockeying for position? How do you meet your kid where they're at when they dive into stuff that maybe you just do not care about? It's just such a different parenting experience than like they go to school and you drop them off at soccer.
I think the most important thing or the thing that helped me was to just try to always remember, what are we doing here anyway? Whenever I was kind of pushing forward with my agenda or my checklist and the things I thought were important, I was really listening to all of these other influences about every kid needs to do X, Y, and Z by this age, and these are the things that matter. And when I would step back from that and look at my child as this really unique, fascinating, curious human who has so many interests and strengths, and I started to see what really matters here is developing those strengths. It's letting this child learn to feel good about himself, to understand himself better, and to get excited about things. But I had to always reset and reframe because we're so conditioned to think that education has to look a certain way, right? Or, you know, being a good student looks a certain way. And it really doesn't. Like, what we're trying to do is raise humans who feel good about themselves, who have strong interests, who know how to advocate for themselves, and who have what it takes to create a life that they love at the end of the day.
And you were able to take all that on yourself. That is so incredible.
Okay. Just to be really clear, we were here for 5.5 years. I homeschooled that whole time, but it was a gradual process. It was a gradual releasing of control. It was a lot of work with parent coaches and a therapist, right? Because I always had to be confronting my own ideas and fears that I was screwing this kid up, right? So it was a work in progress always. But with every year, Asher and I would collaborate more and more. And I started realizing, oh, we're designing this school. What would school look like if we could make it anything we wanted? And the more that Asher got involved and started feeling invested and respected and understood, the more Asher thrived, the more our school got better and the better our relationship became.
That's so amazing. I feel like you're giving moms out there, even me, confidence that you can do all those things. You can be all those things for your kid.
Oof. You have to be really kind to yourself, right? It's not that I did this and was this like super mom who never got frustrated. Like I said, it was messy and I had to keep showing up for myself and doing the work and repairing when I screwed up with my kid, which happened on a regular basis. But that's part of the, I guess, the fun of this journey of raising these neurodivergent kids. They demand that we really show up for them. And if we're going to do that, we have to show up for ourselves. So it is ultimately a win-win, but it's not like it's an easy ride.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you mentioned you had a parent coach and a therapist that kind of helped you stay on track.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a big fan of getting resources when I'm not an expert in any of those things, but I am good at finding people who are, and so that I could feel just supported to be able to do the work I had to do.
So speaking of finding resources, I feel like this is a really good time to pivot into what you did and the massive resource that is the Tilt Parenting Group or community. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So in those early years in Seattle, when we were really floundering and trying to figure out what is actually going on with this kid and struggling to find resources, I just felt this is not okay. I knew that there were other parents like me raising kids who were not fitting in or who were struggling in schools in different environments. And everything that I found was deficit-based. It was making everything seem, you really drew the short straw, like bummer for you. Mm-hmm. And now you have to go over here with these outliers or these rejects, right? And that was the vibe. So much of what I experienced, it was so hard to find anything that could help me forge a path. And so, because of who I am and the way my brain works, I have these skills of being able to do a lot of research and organize it and make it more accessible to other people. That's what I did for teen girls. That's what I've done in other areas of my career over the past 30 years. And so I always knew when I get in a better place, I'm going to do something for parents that it kind of helps other people like me skip this hard part, because this is unnecessary. And it's not okay. So I kind of had that in my back pocket. And then after we moved to Amsterdam and I'd been homeschooling for a few years, I started feeling that like urge. I'm just like a maker and a doer. So I'm always working on a bunch of projects. But I was like, yeah, you get it. I was like, I think it's time to start researching this. So I initially thought I want to create some sort of a website, a home, an online home for parents to come. And when they would land there, they would feel like, ah, okay, these are my people. I feel seen. I don't feel like this is bad news, but rather I'm part of this like kind of amazing community of parents with really cool kids. And so that's where I started. And then I'm a podcast consumer. And I spent about a year talking to parents and really researching and also researching the science of social change movement, because I really saw Tilt Parenting as a movement. I felt like this is like the next civil rights cause, right? Neurodivergent people, children are not broken and they should not have to change who they inherently are to adapt to a more quote unquote normal or typical way of being. They should be able to show up as who they are. And so I went into creating Tilt with that mindset. And then I launched it in 2016. Almost 9 years ago, crazy, with a podcast with maybe three people in my Facebook page, which was like my sister, my husband, and my mom. And then I just started sharing the episodes and it's just grown from there. I think the way that I positioned Tilt and using that language of social change and trying to get people really engaged helped it resonate with people. And then when it resonates with the right person, then they're all in, right? You're like, oh, finally, okay, let's go. I'm with you.
You hit the nail on the head when you said the way that people made you feel was that you got the short end of the stick and, oh, how sorry for you. I had a therapist say, wow, you have a really hard life. I was like, thanks. Can I have my $100 back?
Yeah.
That's super not helpful. And I think my life is beautiful and it's different. Sure. I have three kids, just so you know. So far, only one of them is neurodivergent. But it's a totally different parenting experience. But I loved your book because it is hopeful. It is like you can make a go of this. And I just want to give you a shout out. Instead of using your mental energy advocating for your child at school, you just were like, screw this. I'm going to start my own gigantic parent platform and just skip all that negativity. So huge kudos to you.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't know if I knew what I was doing at the time, but I just was like, this isn't okay. I want it to be okay for everybody. Obviously, every country is in a different place in terms of their understanding of and awareness of neurodivergence and their policies on inclusivity. I feel like the United States is most ahead. The UK and Australia are not far behind, but in terms of where we are and how these kids are supported in society and schools.
I agree with that pretty much. I think in general, I'd say Luxembourg's probably behind, but it all depends on the schools, right? So my question is, what are you doing in Amsterdam or Europe? Because like you said, this is neurodivergent awareness and acceptance is a social global movement.
Yeah, here what I'm doing, because I've just moved back here, just so listeners know, we were here until Asher was, I think, 13, and I kind of felt like I reached the limits of homeschooling and what I could do here. And our community was so, there was a lot of transitions, and a lot of our friends had moved to other countries. So we moved back to the States, to New York City for high school. And now we've, as a family, decided this is really where we want to be. We've all moved back here, and actually Asher's at university in Scotland right now. The context, but now that I'm back and I feel like I have more bandwidth because I'm not homeschooling, I am kind of an empty nester, which is a whole other thing. But part of what I want to do is get involved with the school systems here, have a better understanding of both the private and public school systems and how they approach neurodivergence. I'm starting to meet with people who work with neurodivergent kids and just starting to see where are there opportunities for pushing the conversation. I've done some speaking. I've done speaking in France and some other places where I really have to get attuned to where the windows of opportunity are and how to push things forward without closing the door, because everyone's in a different place in terms of even their willingness to tolerate certain terminology, because there's still a lot of stigma surrounding certain labels. I really do want to see where can I affect or be a part of the shift here. So I'm just in the early stages of that.
I want to ask you two questions. One, when you were homeschooling Asher and you had moved and you didn't know anyone and you were doing all the new expat foreign country stuff, how did he make friends? How did you get any sort of social interaction? Because that's usually where you get it, through school or sports or whatever. I want to also ask you, for the parents here in Luxembourg, if they're sitting in your shoes and they've got this neurodivergent kid and maybe they are homeschooling, maybe regular school is not going well and they're thinking about it, what can we do in our community to get to a better place for the neurodivergent kids?
The first question, how did we create a social opportunities for Asher? There's a vibrant expat community here, and I quickly found a group called Amsterdam Mamas, which at the time was maybe a Facebook group of 10,000 people. I think there's 25,000 people in there now. But that is where I actually put out almost like a singles ad. I was like, new family here from the US. I have this kid with these interests. Anybody have a lonely kid about the same age who wants to hang out? And I got someone responded who I had once seen at a book club or something. And she's, yeah, we'll come on over for a play date. You know, you can still sit 9 and 10 year olds up for play dates. So that was the start, actually. Those two are still friends. They're both majoring in computer science, living 6,000 miles from each other. And and Asher and Sam still talk to each other.
Wow.
And that helped us get into a community of kids and parents who hung out like on Fridays after school at Museum Flight or whatever. So we had that community. And then there are a small group of homeschoolers here. We made some friends through that at meetups, and including two other expat families who we did a lot together, museum days. And so we just found similar people. I had to work extra hard to make sure that I could find those opportunities. And then in the summers, we'd go back to the States, or we would find camps. Like, I tried to pack in some solid social experiences in the summer months when we were traveling. So that's the community piece. And then you ask what people in your community can do to kind of support neurodivergent learners. I mean, I think for anybody who's listening to this, everything that we do to push movement forward helps society, right? So I'm a big fan, if you have a neurodivergent kid, of really normalizing their neurodivergence and talking openly without shame about what's going on. I'm not saying if they like announce my kid has ADHD or whatever, but it's more the way that we don't hide or try to make it a bad thing if our child is struggling in certain areas, because our kids are who they are. There's nothing wrong with who they are. So we can set the tone for normalizing these conversations. And if you're in communities where you have power, you're listening to this and you have neurotypical kids, really starting to check and get curious about how inclusive is this school? What does inclusivity look like? Are there school policies that we can support that would help this classroom or this school be more understanding of and supportive of neurodivergence? What are the policies surrounding discipline? Am I okay with that? Are they punitive against difference, or are they actually encouraging growth? That's how the big change happens.
That's so good. I love that. I'm actually interviewing a couple parents that started the neurodiverse parent group at our school, and they are out and proud. And it's one of the things I like the most about the school, because at the local school where we were, autism definitely had a stigma around it. I felt like it was very old fashioned like that.
Yeah, autism is one of those, in certain cultures, it's really seen as a label you do not want to have associated with you. I just interviewed a woman from the UK who works in prison systems and is trying to push for more ADHD screenings in the prison system. And she said it's the opposite there. If you have autism, there's a lot more understanding, like, oh, this is something we have to take really seriously. But ADHD, that's just a behavioral thing, right? They don't really even acknowledge the true challenges that come with the ADHD brain.
Wow.
So it's really interesting how these certain labels carry these ideas with them in different cultures. And then that totally shapes how they're responded to.
Absolutely. And you're so right saying try to get rid of the stigmas around it. Totally. Can we talk about Asher for a little bit?
Sure.
Were you worried about, because you mentioned he's off at college now, so he's living. Were you worried about his executive functioning skills? Did you pursue any therapies or diagnoses or anything in Europe to supplement the stuff you were doing at home?
Yeah, here there is a organization, actually it's a business called the Expat Kids Club, and it's run by this wonderful therapist named Kate Berger. And she's a phenomenal resource for folks in the Netherlands, and actually is working in other countries now. But we did work with her specifically on like social skills. So she would work with students who were expats, most of whom were neurodivergent, who are having a tricky time just adjusting to life as a third culture kid. And so that became a place for one-on-one therapy as well as, and it was some executive function, I think, but as well as like social stuff. And yeah, like even first semester, I was like, do you want an executive function coach? Because you're going to have to really step up and I'm not going to be there to kind of co-work with you or support you in ways that I did through high school. So even that first semester at university, we had an executive function coach who would just check in once a week over the phone and just touch base on assignments and what's going on and see where some scaffolding would be helpful.
Wow. And where's that person based?
She is based in the U.S. There's so many executive function coaches now, and I just found one who could work virtually. Executive function coaching in general is just a huge growing field, because I think so many parents, even if kids aren't diagnosed with ADHD or learning disability, they're recognizing there's a lot of lagging skills here. I don't know if that's because of COVID and some of that, but it is an area that more and more colleges are noticing kids are coming without some of these skills. And so schools are offering it on campus, and there's just a lot more people available.
Do you know how old you have to be to get that kind of coaching?
God, I think they're available from very young, from elementary school on up. In fact, I have a really good friend of mine. His name is Seth Perler. He's an executive function coach. He runs an online group for parents all over the world, and he works with the parents separately. And then the kids, on Sundays, he does like workshops for kids where he like sets organized backpacks, like do homework. And I think he has kids as young as probably 9 and 10 in that group.
Wow. And that's virtual?
It's virtual, yeah.
Okay. Maybe in the show notes, I can share his information as well as the, what's it, the Expat Kid Club?
Expat Kids Club, yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like to share? If you think of the Luxembourgish neurodiverse expat community, I would say is like small and young. What advice would you have for us?
Something I always just like to share with parents is that if you have a neurodivergent kid, that some of the most powerful work you can do is on yourself, because we really set the tone for how this kid is going to feel about themselves moving forward. And so when we're up against systems that might not be up to speed, or we're finding a lot of resistance, it's really important that we find ways to discharge the frustrations and stress that we experience there, and then keep turning back and making sure our kids know there's nothing wrong with who you are. You have all of these strengths, and just showing up for them. So it's this kind of balance. If you're listening to this and you recognize that you might have like a fix-it mindset, or you're trying to find a solution to get your child back on this path, which is what I spent so many years doing, to just give yourself time to pause and be like, is that what really matters here? Like, how can I better show up for this kid's unique wiring and brain and experience in a way that helps them feel respected and seen? And where are there opportunities for me to push this paradigm forward over here? So it's a heavier lift, right? Like, these kids demand a lot more of us, but it is so worth it. And when we take the time to lean into the whole experience, it will make your relationship with your kids so much more powerful and connected. And it will ultimately lead to better outcomes, I think, for everybody.
Do you have any resources for parents? So like, to avoid spending $100 to go speak to a therapist to have them tell you that your life is very hard. Do you know like neurodiverse affirming and supportive therapy groups that do virtual stuff in case anybody wants to check them out?
Yeah, let me pull together some resources for you to put in the show notes pages. I would certainly say that finding a neurodivergent affirming therapist or support for your family is really important. And there are ways to vet people and find out how they really feel. And I would say some kind of, I don't know, red flags is the right word, because language is always evolving. But if the approach is very much behavioral based, if the focus is on fixing or addressing external behaviors and presentations and not actually supporting nervous system regulation and what's going on internally for this child, that would be something I would want to know more about. I would ask very specifically. And if you're working with people who are using real disorder-based language, right, medicalized, and basically language that reinforces that this is a problem that needs to be fixed, then that is a red flag as well. So you can ask people very specifically, do you consider yourself a neurodivergent occupational therapist? And how do you approach this? And what are your goals? And as a parent, you also want to think, what are my goals for any intervention? Is my goal to get my kid to sit still in class and do their homework on time? Or is my goal to help my kid learn actual skills that's going to help them self-regulate as they get older? So we want to get clear on what we want out of these things. And then we can really be transparent in asking people we're considering working with, like, how do you view this stuff?
So speaking of that, your son, as far as I can tell, is a huge success story. He started out being disinvited to kindergarten or whatever. You took it on yourself. You homeschooled him. So my hat is totally off to you. And now he's off at college with some supports, like you mentioned. Looking back, if you had stayed in the school system and the deficit model, what do you think his outcome would have been like?
I think about that all the time, because obviously we've had a very different lifestyle than most people we know, especially most people raising neurodivergent kids. Transitions are really hard. Moving to a new city as a teenager is hard. Like, we've made choices where I've had to really question, is this the right thing? Am I doing more harm than good? So I often will think, what if we hadn't moved at all? What if we just stayed in that school system? I can't see it working out really well. Our family was in full on crisis. I think I would have spent many more years like still trying to find the right school, arguing with school district, watching my kid my kids' self-esteem get lower and lower, I think it would have been really rough. I think shaking it up in the way that we did, that really led to us, and me specifically, having to just stop and start questioning everything. That is really when things started to change for our family. And I think if we hadn't shaken things up in the way that we did, I probably would have spent many more years not doing that work. I would have just kept forging ahead, right, with my own vision. So I think we ended up doing the right thing for our kid, but we are where we are now. We're still not on the full other side. It's still messy. It's still complicated. My kid is still a complex human who's figuring life out, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Amazing. You took risks that you didn't know if they were going to pan out or not. And from where I sit, they totally did. So I just want to tell you, you're an incredible mom and an incredible human. And thank you for doing this work.
Thank you so much, Haley.